All right, I'm Temru. We're going to try to call Bob Fass from Radio Unnameable and talk to him about his new movie. Hey, Bob, this is Tom Rowe with Free 103.9 and WGXC in upstate New York trying to call and talk to you about Radio Unnameable. I'll try back. All right, bye.
Hello.
Oh, hello, are you there?
Yeah, I am, right.
It was very exciting. There was a discotheque in the hangar that Lindbergh had embarked on his famous trip to France from. We changed our consciousness a couple of degrees in the car, and it was really mind-blowing. And we talked about where else could you go and do something like that spontaneously. And someone said, why don't we go to the airport? It's big, it's empty at night, and it was just beautiful, beautiful environment. We thought something could happen here. We'll bring
happiness. We have to have a name for this event.
Somebody's writing down a great suggestion. Buffy St. Marie, human fly-in. Oh, that's great.
Hundreds of people at Kennedy International Airport.
We played every song we could find about airplanes. You know, we promoted an event.
Listen, tell everybody you know about it. A human fly-in at Kennedy International Airport, International Building. This could be the event of the season, the human fly-in.
We're all going to go there, and a lot of us are going to come home with people that we didn't go out there with. It's going to be beautiful. Fly, fly. Love at Kennedy.
The place is packed. It's like jammed on both sides, like Mardi Gras or something.
Thousands of people showed up at midnight.
It was quite a revelation.
I didn't do the first. I think Gene Shepherd did the first that I'd heard of, and then as I talked to other people who did radio, I heard that it was a fairly common way of a radio station demonstrating that it had reach.
Was to drop turkeys out the window or something like that?
Well, there was a station in Oregon that announced it was going to drop a grand piano into a swamp, and all of the roads for miles and miles around were jammed with people coming to see that spectacle. That was one I heard of. And Gene Shepherd announced that he was going to have... You know who Gene Shepherd was, don't you?
Yes.
He announced that his listeners were to meet in the ruins of the John Wanamaker building. That was a department store that burnt down in lower Manhattan. And, it was just this vast, burnt-out ruin. But at midnight, people showed up and, they carried signs like, down with up. And they flew little tiny kites. And, of course, the police come and ask the favorite police question, who's in charge here? And Shepherd rival's building at Kennedy International Airport. And thousands of people showed up. Thousands of people showed up at midnight on the coldest night of the year. And there were other events like that too. Of course, usually people include the be-ins and the sweep-in, of course, which was a really wonderful event. Was that in the middle of our congratulating ourselves on having thrown this really spectacular surprise party for everybody, someone called in and talked about how her landlord had been trying to burn her out, and there had been a couple of fires this week. The apartment was in ruins, and instantly people called up and said that they would put her in a hotel. Carpenter would come and make repairs to the apartment, and it suddenly became it suddenly became possible for us to put our energy together and to do something that made people's lives a little bit more bearable.
Yippies decided to hold a Yippian at Grand Central Station.
We felt that access to Grand Central Station ought to be celebrated. We wanted everyone to come like they had come to that other transportation hub for the fly-in.
Coming up on the subways, it was unbelievable. Because, like, everybody came early for this party. There was like 5,000 people here early. Well, come on down later. It looks like it'll last all night easy.
Okay, I'm gonna try to.
Yippee!
Yippee!
It was Grand Central Station, after all, and there were plenty of people getting off trains. We said, welcome, it's spring. And they would say, it's spring, how wonderful. And they would dance around, and they would just get right into it.
The soldiers and the sailors that are here, they can't get over it. They're just so pleased with all the girls and all the boys.
That's
they
wonderful.
Just want to know what's happening,
Everything's beautiful here. It's unbelievably beautiful. They're throwing balloons up in the air. There was a soldier there, and people were just going up and shaking hands. He was so turned on by it. The vibrations are so beautiful. I can't describe it.
We just got a call from a guy who was in Penn Station.
Right.
And he said, where is everybody? Okay, keep in touch with us, Paul. Let us know what's happening.
Okay.
Grand Central Station was packed with 5,000 or 6,000 people milling around, but it was a different time.
Gentlemen on duty here at the information desk at Grand Central, what do you think of this tonight?
Sounds like a madhouse, and it is. There's no sense to it at all. They're just disrupting people who would like to get home.
Most people of the 6,000 were friendly and cordial and just milled around and had a good time. But the war was like a cancer that you couldn't get rid of. So people were upset and more angry. There were factions that were more militant than others.
Somebody just blew up a firecracker, as you could hear, it was yelling.
Okay, you're on the air.
Who climbed all over the information booth, and they're holding up a sort of a white flag, and if my vision were a little better, I could tell you what's on it.
Someone from the Up Against the Walkers, a radical anarchist commune, climbed up on the information booth and took the hands off the clock. Time was holy, and there was this icon to time, an anarchist gesture.
And then suddenly the nature of the party changed.
Oh dear, we're having a little fracas here. Uh-oh, the cops are running.
The police waded into this peaceful, unprovoking crowd. I mean, they went mad. I smashed their faces with clubs. They went berserk.
Well, when you're reading a newspaper, you know that thousands of other people are reading the newspaper, but when you're listening to the radio, you're alone in a room, maybe one or two other people that are with you, but it's a much more personal medium.
Did you like the fact that it's kind of more creative too? That people are kind of forced to. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people think that you look much different than you actually look because they have some picture of you in their head.
But there's also another element too. When you're on the radio late at night, you have the feeling that nobody's listening but the people who are initiated, who are into it. You know.
You think late night listeners are more kind of engaged?
You don't really. If you listen to late night radio, with the exception of programs on WBAI, don't you get the feeling that it's kind of edited and presented to you? You don't get any like raw calls, you know. You don't get any calls that are about people's lives. Somewhere I read recently someone saying the rat that gets killed in your backyard has more effect on your life than than the presidential debate.
And so radio can get at that.
I think so. People who are reporting on their lives essentially very tribalizing.
Well, I guess that's especially happened to WBAI. Hasn't WBAI sort of fractured into many tribes?
If you do a great blues program, you're going to find that there's going to be a coterie, a collection, a community of people who love the blues and who love you for playing, you know, and who want to learn from you.
Wasn't your show kind of able to...
Hello?
Can you hear me? Your show was kind of able to cross and get blues fans as well as fans of something else, you know, many kinds of...
Well, you know, it coincided with a tremendous explosion in the recording industry, where a lot of material that had been, you know, very known only to people who knew about